From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I'll give a listen to the Hip-Hopperetta.
I'll become illuminated about the upcoming Light Fest.
And I'll take off with a flight of fancy art show, and there'll be that arts calendar we call.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Okara Imani and Sammy Brown were interns this summer for the Harrison Center for the Arts. Their job? To create a Hamilton-style musical that could be used by tour groups visiting historic Indianapolis locations. Yep, just like, well, any other summer internship. Travis DiNicola spoke with Okara and Sammy to learn more.
Okara, Sammy, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
You are very welcome. I just met you a little over a week ago and was just blown away by what the two of you are doing. And let's start with where you are. You're both interns this summer at the Harrison Center for the Arts, which is downtown on 16th and Delaware. Great art space and galleries and studios and all sorts of stuff that Joanna Taft runs over there, including a really sort of creative, crazy intern program that you two both got involved in.
Yes.
Okara, how'd that start for you? How'd you get involved with this?
Oh, well, so the Harrison Center is pretty closely connected to Heron High School across the street, but also just through tight-knit community to the Oaks Academy. My mom works as a fifth grade teacher there, and I had been subbing, and I met Emily, who works at the front desk at the Harrison Center. And she found out about my music major and that I had been in on-campus operas and things like that, and they really wanted to try and use that experience at the Harrison Center. So I found out about the internship and sort of just kept in contact for two semesters until I got back. And then I got here and we found out what exactly we'd be doing, and I was absolutely on board.
And where do you go to school?
I went to school at IUPUI Fort Wayne, or IUPU Fort Wayne.
Okay.
So I came back and pretty much dove right in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Sammy, how about you?
I am currently a student at Covenant College, going into my third year. And through Covenant, I got to be good friends with Michael Taft. And then through associations, Joanna Taft came to the school and talked about the Harrison Center and everything she was doing there. She's a Covenant College grad. So I got to kind of hear the vision of the Art Center, and I just really wanted to be a part of it. I had friends who had done songwriting internships and seeing what they had created in the city, and
Was this internship specifically about songwriting, or was it sort of more general and open? Or
I think that's what we both had seen at first, was a need for singer-songwriter. What it became was a little more complex than just writing songs and singing them, but I think we both knew that there would be writing involved, at least.
It was a little bit more of a stretch of a project than previous songwriting internships have been, because Joanna had this vision for historical interactive tours that would involve technology, that would involve a live audience, that would involve a little bit more of a historical basis. So a little bit less creative freedom, as well as a little bit more creative freedom than some of the other projects.
So that was kind of the assignment that you guys got. I'm still trying to sort of wrap my mind around it and what you're doing with it. But so basically the assignment was, okay, how are we going to write songs that people will enjoy as they're going through historic spaces, that will help educate people about it, that will be, you know, used as a group or individually or what have you. And and so that was sort of the task you were given. Okay, so you knew kind of what it was coming into it. And the way that you have approached it, solved it, or moving forward with it is really kind of fun. So the Hip-Hopperetta is what the two of you have come up with. Tell us more about that. Okay.
So the title that we have finally settled on, and that has been an intensive process, is Hip-Hopperetta, We want to invoke the idea of small scenes, almost musical scenes, as you would see in, one, an opera, but two, a musical. Mm-hmm. Since for Joanna, her inspiration was Hamilton the musical.
Of course. Okay. Sure.
So we wanted to invoke that idea that we would be painting scenes for people.
How do you
music.
Take Hamilton off the stage and put it in an
yeah,
actual space?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, make it for indie.
Yeah.
So we had that, and then we had the Silent Disco headphones, which would essentially allow the person to zero in on the information
so
and the
this
space
is a,
they're looking
a
at.
A type of headphone that people wear, it's a wireless?
Yeah, it's wireless, and
they're Bluetooth headphones mm-hmm. that are intended to be sound canceling usually, mm-hmm. so that everyone who's listening to them can usually choose between two channels. And so they're all listening to the same thing, but everyone outside doesn't know what they're listening to.
So, and it's sort of the type of thing often used for maybe like historical tours or mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. small groups like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're working, so you've got these two ideas and you've got these two things coming together, and then you keep progressing more with this hip hop retta. Tell me more, Sammy.
Well, we wanted, specifically with the name, we wanted it to communicate that there was going to be a fusion of musical styles. Mm-hmm. We wanted some hip hop influence because mm-hmm. that's kind of the language of today, which is one of Lin-Manuel Miranda's reasons for using it in Hamilton. But we also come from a variety of musical backgrounds, so mm-hmm. we wanted to use some more of the musical, more of the opera. Also, we wanted the songs to reflect the spaces themselves. Mm-hmm. This yeah. project is going to expand, hopefully throughout the entire, not hopefully, throughout the entire
that
city.
That is the plan.
It's going to happen.
Right. You're piloting it right now. And we'll yes. talk about the mm-hmm. locations in just a minute. But the idea is eventually that it would include
yes.
lots
expand.
Of different
yes.
historical spaces.
So we wanted each one to have influences that would give the proper atmosphere
right. yeah.
for the space that you'd be looking at or for the important person that you were hearing about at that time.
Okay.
We
cool.
really wanted the songs to kind of write themselves because storytelling of other people and other buildings, mm-hmm. A lot of times they have character and soul already. You just kind of have to uncover it. So the research we did and digging mm. into these people and these rooms and these histories, the songs, they tend to write themselves. So that was what the fusion styles kind of came from.
Okay. Well, let's talk specifically about the two buildings that you've been working mm-hmm. on. Which one do you want to start with? And tell me a little bit about it, and then we'll give a listen to the song.
You want to start with Heron?
Yeah.
Start with Heron, the Heron yeah. School of Art, which is now, was Heron School of Art and has been many, many things and is now the Heron High School.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So obviously connected to the Harrison Center. Tell me about the song you two wrote for that.
We actually wrote a total of 7 songs okay. for Heron High School. And it was very interesting because we had architectural information that was very textbook style for some of the buildings. We talked about the Italian Renaissance revival style of the main museum building and the men that were represented up on the front. But then we also had these character pieces on John Heron and Mayright Sewell. So we got to kind of, that was our first project as well. So we were definitely yeah. finding our feet, figuring out what this project would actually look like, how we were going to write the songs, how we were going to use the equipment. So we would start with a melody. We would get to know our stomping grounds.
A lot of research.
Mm-hmm. A lot of research, yeah. specifically with the people as well. We would go through the tour of the campus that already existed. The Harrison Center gives tours of Heron campus mm-hmm. all the time. And we would just try to get a feel for it. We would try to take in as much information as possible. Mm-hmm. And so then we would take that and go back to our sound cave mm-hmm. in the City Gallery, kind of pull ourselves away and see what emerged from that mass yeah. of information.
Well, let's give a listen to what emerged, and we'll be back in just a second. But this is the piece that from the pieces that the two of you wrote for the Heron School of Art.
Pa-Philippe Gretfridge, born and raised, studied in the line of Paris, teaching a new day. Art Deco style started in the 25. People wanted all the style to just come alive, like geometric. They just show design. Got to look outside the box, so just come alive. Got people tripping over ziggurats, pyramid line with steps of rock.
Chevron designs kind of move with the sound. Hey, don't that shirt look like Charlie Brown's? Stylized for us become stylistic rather than by nature become idealistic. Sunset patterns spark up the romance, and if it doesn't work, become a freelance. Limestone built in the Central Library, Cincinnati Union Terminal was the primary.
And we're back, and I am with Sammy and Okara, and we're talking about the music that they've been working on with their internship at the Harrison Center for the Arts, creating songs, historic songs for tours and experiences of historic buildings. How do you two expect that these will be used? I know you've been talking about, you know, more than just people listening to headphones all at the same time while they're walking through the space. You want more than that, right? Mm. Okara?
We want it to become a way that indie neighbors and indie visitors can put themselves into the histories that we're telling through music. Music has always been the best way to connect past to present and to connect people from all over. So we intend for it to be a way to have those people put themselves into the story and to feel a part of that story so that there's a bit more pride in where you are and more incentive to help it do well and to grow and enhance the city that you're in, because now you feel personally and directly connected to the history before you, and now you may enact it as you go forward.
So enacting it. I mean, I know one thing you two have been talking about is, you know, incorporating dance actually into this. So the people that are listening would actually also be dancing together in some choreographed way.
I mean, oh, yes.
Tell me more about it. I mean, I know that's sort of the big vision, but how's that going?
Sammy? That's one of the things that sadly we had to kind of put it on a side burner for a little bit as we work through the project, but it is definitely not gone from our vision. We want to incorporate dance for many reasons. One, because it's very fantastical and fun, but it also helps with retention. If people are listening to our song about May Wright Sewell and they get to the chorus.
No, who's May Wright Sewell? That's a name that not everyone will know.
Right. So May Wright Sewell is someone that we talk a lot about in our Heron tour. She was I talk about her as the power woman of Indianapolis, because she championed equality for women, education for everyone, especially for women. She was a pioneer in the arts culture of Indianapolis, and she truly believed that the city should have an identity. And her thing was that she was really good at organizing and inspiring other people, too. So she was a master of committees, and she was the founding member of the Art Association of Indianapolis.
She started countless organizations.
She's just incredibly impressive. And as we were researching her, she developed this image in our brain of sort of an Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
R&B queen.
Doesn't take no crap from anyone type person. So we named her song Nobody's Fool. And so she has a chorus. And so we had this vision of people doing this specific move when they heard this line in the chorus. And so that when they heard that, they thought of the information and they thought of the woman and they thought of that dance move that they did to kind of help with the
and
association.
That space they were in. And,
Right. To wrap it all together.
Very cool. Yes. Okay. So I know your internships are wrapping up soon. So how is this going to continue on?
So right now we are finishing up writing songs for the Harrison Center tour that happens through the galleries, and there's always artwork in the halls. So we talk about those spaces and how they've made a journey from being a part of First Presbyterian to now having a relationship with Redeemer, who's connected to us still. And so we, as we go out, will create sort of a framework or a blueprint for how others can come in and
keep adding and
fill,
building.
Yes, exactly. Fill
You've
these positions. And, you know, this is kind of how we went about it. And this is the order you want to do it. And you want to be done by this time in the summer. And so that they can have a framework to look at and go forward and
create many
more.
Well, let's take a listen to one of the songs from the Harrison Center for the Arts to wrap this up. But want to thank you both, Sammy and Okara, for coming in today and the work that you've been doing. Really cool project. Really cool project.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll give a listen to this one as well.
Here in the Prospect Gallery. There was a chapel in the 60s. High above your head remain the same things. Well, at the turn of the 21st century, local artists made an entry. From then on, the space became the gallery number two.
Travesty Nicola with Okara Imani and Sammy Brown. They were summer interns at Harrison Center for the Arts. You can learn more and listen to more of their hip-hop-retta project at citygalleryindy.org, citygalleryindy.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indianapolis Foundation is celebrating a century of investment in the Central Indiana community, and Sharon Gamble invited Vice President for Development and Philanthropic Services, Rob McPherson, in to share the highlights of their plans.
So, I know you can't speak to all, the whole 100 years, of course, because you're such a young man, but...
I've been around for over half of it.
Yeah, well, but not at CICF right. And the Indianapolis Foundation. So, Indianapolis Foundation, just for people who are like, oh, we know they're big community foundation, but how did it start? Remind us.
Well,
go back to the beginning.
Actually, his community foundation idea was brand new in 1914. So, the Indianapolis Foundation was one of the first... 6 or 7 community foundations ever created in the world.
I didn't know that.
Yep. After Cleveland and bankers in Cleveland found these trusts that were sitting in banks being unused and through a process decided that they should be used for community good, therefore a community chest-like opportunity because the purposes of the trusts had outlived their missions,
yeah.
Really, because one of the story I love to tell, Sharon, is one of the first trusts were to make sure that there were good hitching posts and watering troughs in downtown Cleveland for horses in perpetuity.
Awesome.
Well, Cleveland didn't need those anymore in the early 20th century, and so that money was not being used, and we were able to turn that into public good money, community chest money. Bankers here in Indianapolis were friends with bankers in Cleveland, went up and learned about this new community foundation, this community chest idea, came back here, started some trust companies, and the Indianapolis Foundation was born in 1916.
That's amazing. And was it something that our leaders embraced?
Yes.
Immediately?
Absolutely. From our very well-known leaders to just, you know, people who thought this was a great idea and more, again, grassroots leaders. But Vice President of the United States, Charles Fairbanks, who was from here, was one of our first trustees. Mr. J.K. Lilly was one of our first trustees. A few years after we started, the Ephraimson family began their almost 100 years of service on our boards. And Gustav Ephraimson, four generations ago, thought this was a great idea too. So it was a great, even back then, which I think is in our DNA here, there was a great public-private charitable partnership started even back in the early 20th century.
I'm glad you said that, because sometimes, especially in we're in a very political year, sometimes people think of that as, oh, that's a Republican idea, or, oh, the Democrats brought that along. No, it's much more general than that.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's a Hoosier, and
actually,
Indianapolis idea.
A lot of the religious community and faith communities came together early on at that time too to help us get started.
And you're doing a lot of things to celebrate, and we're going to save the flashiest one for last. But among other things, you're having a dinner.
Yeah. So the 100th anniversary gala is on Saturday, August 27th. At the Scottish Rite Cathedral downtown, and we'll talk about why there in a few minutes. But we're going to celebrate, tell a little bit of history, but we're really going to usher in what we're calling a new century of philanthropy. 100 years is done. We can't change much of that. We're very proud of that history, but now we're going to move forward, and what can we expect for the next 100 years? And so we're going to give away $1 million that night at the dinner in a very surprise way. No one knows how we're going to do that, and it's going to, I hope, forecast what we believe the next century of philanthropy in Indianapolis could be.
There might be some audience participation.
There will be some audience participation. So I'd love for anybody and everybody to come. It's only $100. Gets you a really nice dinner and cocktail party, and then a chance at helping participate in giving away $1 million.
Sweet. But then the really flashy thing you're going to do.
Yeah. So our gift back to the community, because truly, a community foundation is all about everybody in it, whether it's the contributors and the donors and the families that utilize Indianapolis Foundation and CICF to achieve their charitable goals, or whether it's all the not-for-profit organizations and the hundreds and hundreds of those that we fund over with millions of dollars. I mean, we give away $50 million a year collectively in all of our foundations and funds together.
Aren't you one of the largest community foundations in the country?
Yeah. We have about $700 million in collective charitable assets, a lot of them the families that do their philanthropy through us. But we're in the top 25 of community foundations around the country.
That's remarkable. More bragging rights
for
Indianapolis.
Yeah. So our gift to the community for this 100 years of service and support and philanthropy is a two-day, or I should say a two-night light festival. We are bringing over 20 artists from around the world, a lot even from here at home here in Indianapolis, to produce a festival on the downtown canal that it deals specifically in light, projection, technology, and things that most of us have never, ever, ever seen before. We're going to light up entire facades of buildings. It's going to be incredibly interactive. As I said, 20 to 25 artists, and so families can roam the canal, interact and participate in a number of these incredibly artistic displays and see this city like they've never seen it before.
And this is something some other cities have been doing, but we've not tried this before.
Yeah, and not many in the United States, actually. These are big in Eastern Europe and in Asia. Minneapolis has done a festival the last 5 years, and there are consultants and are helping us get this done quickly this year.
Quickly, because I wanted eavesdrop on the conversation going back to not very long ago. February, was it?
Actually, yeah, January, February, we thought, well, maybe we could do one projection on one building right outside the Scottish Rite Cathedral where we wanted to have our dinner on Saturday, August 27th. But then we're like, well, if we're going to do one, maybe we could do a couple. And since we're on the Glick Peace Walk and the Cultural Trail, maybe we can engage the Cultural Trail. Well, then the canal's right there, and then there's more texture with water and buildings. And literally, it exploded into this, what is going to be a pretty significant national festival that we're going to do right here in Indianapolis that, again,
put together in remarkably short
amount of time.
Normally this is a year-long or 2-year-long process.
Yeah. And our friends at Northern Lights Minnesota, northernlights.mn, are our consultants, and they've really helped us accelerate the progress.
I want to mention this right now. If you're like, ooh, light festival, cool, I'm in. You need lots and lots of volunteers.
Yeah, we'd love to have some more volunteers help us with crowd control and to answer questions. It is a nighttime festival, so it'll be a little more challenging in getting around in the dark. But we would love to have more volunteers. It's Friday night, August 26th, and Saturday night, August 27th from like
8:52 or sunset.
Yeah, 8:52 p.m. to 1:02 a.m. both nights. But if you'd love to volunteer, we'd love to have you. And the website, cicf.org, is the place to go to find out more about Enlighten, the festival, as well as a place to volunteer and
which
see all the
should,
artists.
You spell that for us because it's very clever.
Yeah, Enlighten. So it's I-N-Light-I-N. festival.org, or you can really get it through the CICF.org website as well.
Yeah. Now, this is a question that hadn't even occurred to me till now because I haven't been to a light festival on the scale of this one. Will some lights be extinguished so that we can fully appreciate the light festival?
Yeah, so we're trying to bag some lights and ask some of the buildings surrounding some of the installation sites to turn their lights off so we can truly have as little ambient light as possible. But the technology part of this side of it, Sharon, is amazing. I mean, the power that these projectors have. I mean, we're going to light up the entire facade of the Scottish Rite Cathedral, and the distance that they have to throw that light and the strength of the lamps and all of that in the projectors are just incredible. So that technology is amazing. So you know, those of you that's driven by that incredible Gothic architecture on Meridian Street, just imagining this interactive display, and actually this is going to be an engaging installation where your bodies and the hands will help determine and shape the images on the building. So there's actually some hand and body movements that will come to life in the actual installation on the Scottish Rite Cathedral.
That is so fun. I heard about one thing that just knocks me out, the Silent Night Disco. Tell us about the Silent Night Disco, speaking of movement.
So we thought it was a hindrance that the city has a sound ordinance at 10 o'clock all amplified sound has to stop. So we were like, oh, what if some of the artists that are doing these things want to have a audio component to the visual piece, or if we wanted to show a movie, which we are going to show a movie at a couple places on the canal. So we decided to turn that negative into a positive, and we're going to have a Silent Night Disco DJ, kind of DJ wars almost, and we're going to have 50 headphones that that guests to the festival can check out, and they'll have two or three or four channels on the headphones, and they'll be dancing to whatever music they like on the headphone, which might be not what somebody right next to you is dancing to something else, and you're like, wow, that's a crazy dance. Let's check out that channel. So that'll be a really fun thing that'll happen from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. both nights.
Fun video created that
night. Absolutely.
I can imagine.
Absolutely.
I saw a still of a projection of words on the facade of Bethel AME.
Yeah, one of the major signature installations in the festival is going to be on the Bethel AME Church. It's the oldest African-American church in the state of Indiana, 147 years old. And unfortunately, the church body, the congregation, is moving out of that church, and it's going to become a commercial property. But we're going to pay homage in partnership with the congregation. We're going to pay homage to the African-American history of that church and of that location in downtown right by Indiana Avenue and all the cultural aspects of the jazz and history there on Indiana Avenue. And this is going to be a multi-location and multi-artistic combination where there are going to be projections on the outside of the church, again paying tribute and homage to African-American history. And inside there's going to be gospel singing and jazz performances, and there's going to be some of that outside too, with some dance and some African-American crew dancing, which is going to be really awesome. But yeah, so the visual projections and paying homage again to the great history there on the outside, and then a multi disciplinary performances on the inside.
You mentioned earlier at the brainstorming just a few short months ago the idea of playing with the texture of water. There's some floating light installations on the canal.
Yeah, there's going to be two or three things in the canal. We have a couple local artists who are creating icebergs that are going to float and change color and reflect and celebrate the water. And then there's a piece coming to us, I think, out of California that's called Droplets. And it actually is in the water as well. And it represents how a drop in the water can ripple and how waves can, the movement of the water. And so these light installations inside are going to represent, you know, the actual water
itself.
What
a perfect metaphor for what a community foundation does. Well played.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I realize you haven't seen all of these or even stills from all of these, but do you have a favorite that we haven't talked about yet?
I think one of the other massive ones that are just going to blow people away is the entire 14 stories of the state office building on the south end of the canal, the Indiana Government Center North, and it'll be the north side facing the canal. An artist by the name of Ryan Patrick Griffin out of L.A. is actually going to create his piece live in front of us for 4 hours both nights. So he actually, like a DJ, mixes music. Mm-hmm. He mixes video live, and so he's going to take some images from Indianapolis to make it a homegrown artistic piece, and some of his, he calls it poetic video imagery, and he's going to sit there on the canal, and we can all watch him with his computers, and he is going to manipulate and create the video piece that will be 4 hours long both nights on that 14 story high building. You'll be able to see it from most anywhere downtown, and it's going to be spectacular.
Sharon Gamble with Rob McPherson, Vice President for Development and Philanthropic Services for the Indianapolis Foundation. In Light In is Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th in downtown Indianapolis. You can learn more about the stunning Light Festival and other celebrations to mark the Indianapolis Foundation's 100th anniversary at cicf.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I feel a little disappointed that we don't have a hip-hop way to get into our calendar, given that really cool interview you just did.
I know.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to like do a hip-hop version of
What'll We Do?
For you.
For you. We got to work on that. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whether you can find the flow or not, we have some events that you can go out and see and do on our calendar, including if you haven't realize this, you must be living under a rock. This is the launch of the Fringe Festival.
Fringe,
it's time to fringe.
What do you think about going
well,
to see?
Well, Travis gave you some of his picks last week. I'm going to give you a few this week, including what's a wedding got to do with it? And here's the plot line. Ancient property rights, avian private parts, and manufactured space rocks collide in this true story of boy meets girl. The solo storytelling event comically and honestly pursues a question as old as love itself. That's one of the things I'm interested in. Did you talk about, I think Drankspear may have been on your list last year.
You know, it's got an interesting title and premise.
Yeah. Or Romeo and Juliet in Under an Hour and Under the Influence as well.
So does that mean the actors are actually...
I don't know if it's method acting or not.
Yeah,
you'll
okay.
have to dial up Electric Pond Theater Company and ask them. And Sun Kring Brewery is involved as well. Hmm. So I think that might just be an experience that you have to go live through.
As is most of Fringe.
As most of Fringe, that's true. Also, I'd like to see more of you, a burlesque review. I think that needs to be said with a Groucho Marx leer that I can't quite muster up. The best first dates end with, I'd like to see more of you. And this company takes it from there. The best singing, dancing, laughing, and stripping... is all in one place. I'm not talking about furniture. They start on the hour, and like all great therapy, end 50 minutes later. You'll keep wanting more, they promise.
Interesting.
I know. I'm intrigued.
There's another one that showed up that I'm kind of curious, and I just love the title. Hall and Oates Time Traveling Detectives, and that's H-A-U-L and O-A-T-Z. So they've been sent back in time to solve and prevent a crime. It's a film noir adventure when the Hall & Oates attempt to stop the Mantis, a cannibalistic lover who lures men to an untimely death, features live music, dancing, murder, and mystery. It's a musical comedy. Yes. Hall & Oates. This one. Defiance Comedy is the company, and they're performing on the Phoenix main stage. The Russell Theater is part of Fringe.
You know, there's no way in our short calendar time allotted to us that we could possibly do justice to all of the strange and wonderful offerings. But just a reminder, Fringe comprises but is not limited to dance, drama, comedy, cabaret, magic, music, multimedia, and as we like to say, much, much more.
Much, much more.
Go to IndieFringe.org and figure out your calendar and eat your Wheaties and drink your coffee, because you're going to need a lot of energy to see all the Fringe shows.
384 performances.
You may not see all of them.
Probably
but...
not. Hey, and one thing I do want to add is that this year, for the first time, there's free festival parking at the IPS parking lot. If you enter off of College Avenue, the City of Indianapolis and IPS is making this parking available for the duration of Indie Fringe. That's where the Coke building is, just off of Mass Ave and College. So free parking there if you're going to Fringe. That's a pretty awesome thing during...
Yeah.
All
free
of Fringe
parking
week.
Is good.
I know,
yeah.
But you have to go to Fringe to get the free parking. I don't know how they enforce that, but I'm sure they do.
They're going to quiz you.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
They're going to ask you to quote a line from a Harrison the Hip Hop musical.
Oh, nice. I like that.
You know, there are some other things going on as well. What else do you have? I know. Shocking, isn't it?
Coming up later this month, Voices from Central State. It's a series that is looking at the patient perspective on the life of Indianapolis's flagship psychiatric institution, the Central State Hospital. A lot of interesting events that have been going on there of late. This is the first one of a series. It's titled Then There Is No Need to Speak. It's a one-woman show. August 26th and 27th. It's adapted from Anna Agnew's 1886 memoir about her seven-year hospitalization. And it's being directed by a good friend of ours, Terry Boris, who's been on Art of the Matter before, talking about a lot of her work with Shakespeare and stuff. But it actually takes place at the Indiana Medical History Museum. And it's part of a series that includes some other pieces, called I Remember Jones in late September, and then in November, Leaving Home and Exhibit. So these are different events that are being sponsored by IUPUI and the Arts Council and Indiana Humanities, all looking at different things taking place at Central State and the Indiana Medical History Museum.
Which is a fascinating venue if you've never
been
out there.
It's a great space.
I mean, brains in jars, can I just say? And fascinating.
You just did say, yeah.
Instruments and, oh, wow. Crazy, cool, creepy, makes you glad to live in an age of more modern medicine. Hey, the Jewish Federation of Greater Indianapolis and the JCC are partnering to present Indianapolis's first Israeli film festival, which is going to show Israel as a lively and innovative nation, as well as spotlight its thriving film industry. The festival explores Israeli society through features, documentaries, and conversations with Israeli filmmakers, as well as stars of the films. And the festival begins August 21st and runs through the 24th. It features five films, has two after events that include conversations with the star of the film and or the filmmaker. It's $10 per person or $35 for an all films pass. And you can find out lots more. Sorry about galloping through so quickly, but find out lots more at jccindy.org/Israeli-film-fest. So jccindy.org/Israeli-film-fest.
Very cool. Hey, on Saturday, this Saturday, the 20th, from noon to 3, there is a authors event for self-published authors at Book Mamas in Irvington, featuring some of the authors from Sisters in Crime, as well as Jan Tilley, Michael Leopard, Madeline Kinsey, Sarah McClure, Francesco Quarto, Heather Chastain, and Lisa Duda. All will be there signing their books and talking about their books. Again, that's at Book Mamas on Saturday from noon to 3.
If you are interested in making the most of what's left of summer and spending a little time by water, well, you really have choices at both ends of the state. You can either go to the poor man's ocean, as I like to call Lake Michigan, or you can head south and go to the Ohio River. And to that end, here's a bit of a road trip for you. It's the River Stage Summer Concert Series in Jeffersonville, Indiana, right there on the beautiful Ohio River. Every Friday night, there'll be performing acts, and it's a place to listen to music, but also breathtaking views of the river, and also of Louisville's skyline. You can enjoy music under the stars. You can find out more at theriverstage.com, theriverstage.com.
Speaking of music under the stars, if you haven't been out to the Symphony on the Prairie this year yet, what are you waiting for?
Really?
There's about 4 weekends left, including this weekend. The band Toto is performing.
Oh.
And the next weekend, you've got Who's Bad, the music of Michael Jackson. And on September 1st and 2nd, Super Diamond, the Neil Diamond tribute. And on the 3rd and 4th, the Company Men music of the decades, including music by the Four Tops and Adele and then Temptations, Billy Joel, lots of fun stuff. But lots of good concerts that are still taking place out at Marsh's Symphony on the Prairie at Connor Prairie. In fact, you can even get an end-of-season four-ticket package if you contact the Symphony.
Oh, that's cool. Good thinking. Hey, Fine Estate Arts and Rugs, which moved from its South Broad Ripple location to 1332 North Illinois Street a few months ago, this month it's featured artists in Gallery 2. So there's the one side of the business that features historic artists, especially Brown County painters and beautiful art rugs. But the other side, Gallery 2, features contemporary artists, as in Living Today. And there are three printmakers featured this month, Mark Burkett, Carol Fisher, and Arlene Springer. A large selection of their work is on view right now and also for sale, I should point out. And you can learn more by sending an email to info@gallery-2.com or just drop in 1332 North Illinois Street Tuesday through Friday. 10 to 6 or 10 to 4 on Saturday.
Very good. You can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to Sharon and I next week on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Flight of Fancy is a group show featuring artists who explore subconscious thoughts, dreamlike scenes, and surreal visions at Indiana Landmark Center's Rapp Family Gallery. It opens in October. Travis DiNicola couldn't wait to find out about it and invited artists Brinton Ferrand and Wazil to learn more.
Wazil, Brinton, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. It sounds like a really interesting show that's coming up in October at the Landmark Center. The two of you are a part of it, as well as quite a number of other artists. Basically, my understanding is that the show sort of deals with subconscious thoughts, dreamlike type of visions. Wazil, let's talk about you. How did you get involved with being a part of this show?
Sure. I was invited to actually showcase my paintings, first of all. I showed up at another event wearing my own design, so I was asked to start a fashion show for Flight of Fancy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually paired with two world-traveling photographers, Tyson White and David Slivka. So I'm actually going to be printing their photography on fabric, and I'm going to be creating a runway show.
That's very cool. Now, have you done fashion design like that before? Are you primarily a visual artist, paintings or what have you, or a whole bunch of different things?
I'm primarily a painter. Mm-hmm. I've been sewing for a little over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
I started sewing for Less Fortunate just so I could up my skill level, and from there I just decided to make clothes for myself, and then from that I made my own clothing collection.
So tell me about working with these two photographers for the show. What do you have planned for it so far?
They both have really abstract kind of photography. So the colors are really great. There's a lot of just weird designs, but mainly just to showcase their photography in a new way,
mm-hmm.
versus just putting it on canvas and putting it on a wall. So the runway show itself will be a little bit different. They aren't just going to be walking out for 2 seconds and then going backstage. They're actually going to be interactive with the people at the show, which will be really nice for David and Tyson.
Very cool. So tell me a bit more about the fashion that you're designing for the show. I mean, how is it dreamlike or surreal?
Mostly the styles. There's a lot of flowy dresses. I've got some skirts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give away too much. I want it to be some kind of surprise, but just the style of the clothes mainly. I took a lot of inspiration from the 60s and 70s for the style lines.
Okay. very cool. And Brenton Fran, welcome. Tell me how you got involved with this show as well.
Amy Ward is kind of the coordinator of the show. She was a former student of mine, and so she's contacted me several years ago when mm-hmm. she was running the Raw organization, and I enjoy being around Amy because she has so many different art contacts that, I mean, it's, you know, in Indianapolis you have portrait painters, plein air painters, abstract painters, and each mm-hmm. tend to stay in their own group, and sure. Amy tends to bring all different styles together in one venue, and it's kind of fun to learn from each other and yeah. experience that.
Now, do you still teach art? I know you have been an art professor.
I've been retired for 2 years.
Okay, and where did you teach?
I taught at Mooresville High School. Mm-hmm. I coached wrestling and volleyball and track. And
excellent. So now you're devoting your time pretty much full-time to your art?
About 10 years ago, I don't play golf. I don't work with the wood. What am I going to do? I better get really good at this. And
well, tell me a bit about more about your work, about your art.
In a nutshell, I paint life.
Okay.
So that you can enjoy the view of my world.
Excellent.
And I'm...
What are the sort of things you pay attention to?
I go out to bars and restaurants and sit mm-hmm. back and watch people and listen to people. And so, you know, one time I make editorial statements. One of my heroes is Salvador Dali. So a lot of my work looks surrealist, looks like Dali.
Okay.
And so I kind of bounce around from very abstract to very classical realism. And so I've kind of got a whole different look, different categories and so on.
Now, are you creating new works for the Flight of Fantasy show or bringing in some?
I typically, right now, I've got about 6 paintings going. I'm trying to come up with a brand new one mm-hmm. for this show, but okay. I've got several pieces that I can put in the show at this point in time. So, you know, if I get one done, then good, and if not, then I've got things to fall back on.
Now, when you heard the theme of the show and that it did sort of feature surrealist dreamlike themes, and it sounds like if you're a fan of Dali, that's right up your alley, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is – I really work hard to try to allow my subconscious mind to, you know, the right side of the brain to dominate my artwork. Mm-hmm. And I really work hard to eliminate the left brain pessimistic linear thinking world.
Wazil, let me ask you, what did you think of when you first heard about the theme of this show?
I think it's a great theme. I think it leaves a lot of room to just be kind of weird,
mm-hmm.
which is great for me.
It's a real playful theme.
Yeah,
it
really is. I play with that theme a lot in my artwork to begin with, just mm-hmm. the surreal kind of, what is that going on? So I think, it definitely leaves a lot of room for creativity. You can interpret it any way. It mm-hmm. can be your subconscious in a negative way or a positive way. So it's pretty open.
Now, you two are both artists, but not met until we got you in the radio studio together, which I'm going to be part of the show. Do either of you know any of the other artists who are participating in this, or is this kind of all a whole new thing?
I can speak for myself. I know some of the mm-hmm. people, like Tyson White. I've been in several shows with him, an outstanding photographer, like she's already said. J.D. Bills is another one that I've been in a couple shows. So
yeah.
She's got so many people and so many different venues that she knows about in Indianapolis that after a while you start running into different people that you've been in a show with or
sure.
talked to. And, you know, now with Facebook and that kind of thing, you at least know who they are.
And Wazil, how about you?
Same. A few of them I've met at previous galleries. I know Deidre mm-hmm. Bush. Actually, one of the models, Cassie Kern, she is actually showing her work there, too. So that's pretty neat that she gets to be involved in both aspects.
It sounds like the opening night, the reception's going to just be a lot of fun. I mean, both you've got the fashion show, but also a band, and it sounds like a lot of sort of other odd activities going on to kind of make even the whole opening a bit surreal as well. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, Wazil, what do you have planned next beyond the Flight of Fancy show? What else are you working on right now?
I am working on my own personal clothing line. Mm-hmm. It's called the Waz Waz Collection. So it actually, there's female and male versions of each style, I guess. So the fabric is the same for both female and male, and it's kind of a way for couples or actually just any kind of sex of couples mm-hmm. to complement each other in an alternative way. So that's my main focus. I paint Very cool. every day, pretty much. So mm-hmm. I'm just working on trying to get my work in galleries and working on my collection.
Do you have a studio in town or?
Out of town. It's about an hour and a half northwest of here. Mm-hmm. It's called Attica. Okay. It's a really tiny town. It's quiet. It's just focusing on my work.
Excellent. And Brenton, how about you?
I've got some work up in Lafayette at a coffee shop, and Amy's got several different pop-up shows. There's going to be a show coming up here in Fountain Square, and then, you know, Irvington has the Halloween Fest, so you can kind of get macabre and do mm-hmm. Halloween stuff, or in yeah. the spring I do Comic-Con, and so you kind of go towards the one, and then you can go. I've got ballet pictures and violin pictures, so I can go real conservative or pretty liberal and pretty strange.
Across the whole spectrum.
Yeah, right. And so one might think I'm a little schizophrenic, but, you know.
Well, that's what an artist has to do, right?
Right.
To get your work out there and keep solving those problems. Well, I want to thank you both very much, Brenton and Waziel. Thanks for coming in today. It sounds like the Flight of Fancy show is going to be a really interesting night.
Thanks
for having us.
Too. Thank you. Yeah.
Travis DiNicola with artist Brenton Ferrand and Waziel. These two artists and others are part of a group show called Flight of Fancy. It opens at the Indiana Landmark Center's Rapp Family Gallery in October. That's a ways away, so for more information, visit indianalandmarks.org and click on events to get that on your calendar.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's upcoming season, and in particular, their Carnegie Hall concert.
Wow. Then I'll find out about a new opera based on a Vonnegut work.
And I'll check in and learn about this year's Start with Art Luncheon, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.